Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and to start this week, I have to play this one clip from Fox News' Laura Ingraham on her primetime show, and I feel like since I had to endure Laura Ingraham during my time in right-wing radio and her endless dronings on and on about how progressives are ruining this country, hey, I think I have to subject you to this pain as well. And remember, this is what counts as high-minded, highbrow, right-wing intellectualism nowadays. Listen.
Since the Democrats love the EU, they love Europe, they always want to be in Europe, they want to do the same thing here in the United States. And forget your constitutional rights. Those can be damned, even your movement controlled. The National Transportation Safety Board is recommending that all new vehicles get technology that makes speeding, quote, more difficult or completely impossible, following in Europe's footsteps. Joining me now, Ned Ryan, American Majority CEO and founder. Ned, this is why they love the lockdowns. They like to keep us all moving as little as possible permanently. Yeah. What's Mayor Pete going to do here, Ned? What does Mayor Pete want? Back on the bike for him?
Well, yeah. Mayor Pete, little Pete, and the rest of the nanny staters want to dictate. It's almost 280 million Americans that have a driver's license. How fast they're going to be able to drive. And their argument, Laura, is that they're going to prevent 12,000 speeding deaths, which if you do the math is 0.00043% of all drivers. And this is, if they were really concerned about saving lives, I'm sorry, most of those people advocating for this, they don't care about butchering babies. So this is about control.
So that was Laura Ingraham and Ned Ryan, who is the CEO of American Majority. Majority of what, I have to ask? I don't know. Anyway, you heard them complaining about the nanny state because the National Transportation Safety Board recently recommended that new cars come equipped with this kind of technology to prevent Americans from speeding on the roadways. Now, that's what's on the top of the right-wing intelligentsia's mind, or at least that's what Fox News wants its viewers believing should be at the forefront of their agenda. And suddenly, according to Ingraham and this Ned Ryan, speeding has always been a constitutional right? Okay, anyway, I looked up the NBC article that Ingraham cited in her segment, and I looked into it. So if you don't mind, I'd like to read a portion of the story for you just so that you get an understanding of what this speed-limiting technology is all about. And is it happening tomorrow, like Ingraham wanted us to feel like? Intelligent speed assistant technology differs from traditional speed-limiting devices in that there isn't a flat speed cap. The limiting effect takes into account the speed limit of where a person is driving. The technology was one of several recommendations the National Transportation Safety Board made to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, as well as all 50 states and the major domestic auto manufacturers. The NTSB said a final report regarding these recommendations will be published in the coming weeks. It's unclear when or if these recommendations will be implemented. Sarah Solick, public affairs specialist for the NTSB, noted that the board does not have regulatory or enforcement powers, and that it initially recommended incentivizing intelligent speed assistance technology to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration back in 2017. The status of that recommendation, even now that it's been reiterated, is listed as quote-unquote non-urgent. Okay, so wait a second. This is the second time the NTSB recommended this technology, but I don't seem to recall the Fox News freakout back then. Oh, wait, that's right. Who was president back in 2017? Right, that's right. Dear Leader Trump, of course. Now, while auto manufacturers aren't excited about such an idea, the whole idea about making our roadways safer for everyone should be of the utmost concern for all of us, right? The NBC story says last year, more than 12,000 people in the U.S. died in speeding-related crashes. Hundreds of thousands more were injured. I mean, here in Michigan, we are dealing with the horrific tragedies many people are dealing with in trying to care for loved ones who suffered life-altering injuries on the roads. That's why so many of us are begging Democrats to fix parts of the so-called auto reform law of 2019, which left those people and their families with little help and care from those car crashes. I don't know if speed-limiting technologies in our cars is the best way to prevent such injuries, but it's not the first time that government has taken steps to help keep roadways safer. The seatbelt, for example. Speed limits, for example. Drunk drivers, for example. Those are just a few ways, off the top of my head, in how the government implemented policies designed to save lives. Here's a story I found from January 1st of 1986 when California implemented a statewide seatbelt enforcement law, and from what you can hear, people being interviewed there weren't exactly thrilled with the new law. Again, this is from 1986. Listen.
Here at the Bay Bridge Toll Plaza, one can get a pretty good idea of just how many people are complying with the new seatbelt law. More than 100,000 cars pass through the toll plaza on an average day. A lot of these motorists have yet to comply.
Well, obviously I don't think much about it.
I'm not very fond of it.
I think it's a good law.
But you never use it.
I forgot.
Again, that was from ABC 7 Bay Area News back on January 1st of 1986. I love that last answer from the woman. She loves the law, but she just forgot to wear a seatbelt. Hey, at least she was honest. But guess what? We are all wearing seatbelts, with a lot of new cars equipped with technology reminding us to put on our seatbelts. And sometimes those reminders can be quite annoying. I know it because I will yell at my car sometimes. I know it. Annoying, yes, but awful? Nanny state? I don't think so. I'm only pointing this out because making things safer for people, I don't think, is such a bad thing. That being said, I'm not sure that speed-limiting technology is the best idea, but that's besides the point. The NTSB is recommending this a second time, but I'm only hearing about it this time on Fox News, not when Donald Trump was in office. And by the way, did you hear how they were so disdainful about Pete Buttigieg, who is the transportation secretary? And you had that Ned Ryan guy calling him Little Pete. You get it? Because, see, he's homosexual. Now, I'd like to go back, though, if you don't mind, and you may have caught it the first time I played it, to something that Laura Ingraham's guest, Ned Ryan, said as he gave his reasoning for dismissing the idea of installing this kind of technology in new cars. Listen.
And this is, if they were really concerned about saving lives, I'm sorry, most of those people advocating for this, they don't care about butchering babies, so this is about control.
And there you have it. It all goes back to abortion for them. I'm guessing he's talking about abortion because I don't know who's about butchering babies. I haven't seen any news stories about an epidemic of butchering newborn babies. You'd think I'd see that kind of story somewhere. It'd be kind of big. But no, I know he's talking about abortion. You see, the so-called pro-life crowd ain't about being pro-life. They're only about subjugating women to adhere to what a government run by a right-wing crystal fascist government says they must do. The cognitive dissonance on that side is never, ever lost on me. They complain ad nauseum about a nanny state in one breath, but then in the very next breath, they want government to tell women what they can or can't do when it comes to their health. Now, thousands die, and thousands more suffer debilitating injuries due to car crashes, some due to high-speeding cars. Again, I'm not saying that installing this kind of technology, controlling how fast you drive, is the best angle at curbing car crash deaths and injuries, but I do know one way we could help maybe alleviate all kinds of traffic on the roadways, which might help lead to less crashes: public transportation. Yes, public transportation via bus, rail service, or whatever else. You know, this past Thanksgiving weekend, my dad took my wife and I to downtown Ann Arbor, where we hopped on a shuttle bus, which took us to the Detroit Circle Center, where we walked around downtown for a couple of hours before the Michigan State-Penn State game at Ford Field. And after we looked around and got a bite to eat and drink, we hit the bus later that evening and made our way back to Ann Arbor. The price? is pretty inexpensive for the trip. We save the hassle of finding parking, the hassle of dealing with downtown traffic, and it was convenient. I mean, that was the best part. It was convenient, and the bus was on time both ways. Sadly, there were only a couple of us on the bus headed downtown, and I'd say the bus was maybe a quarter filled heading back to Ann Arbor from Detroit. It did appear like most of the other passengers did some shopping in Detroit as we rode back to Ann Arbor, so that was kind of cool. And I wondered, as we were heading back to A Squared, I wondered why more people were not utilizing this service. It kind of rocked. Again, the stops are centrally located in both downtowns. The tickets are pretty cheap. The ride is relaxing, and it's efficient. Now, naturally, I know most love our cars and autonomy that cars make us feel at times, but I believe cars are also why Michigan's infrastructure and environment basically sucks. We've been socialized to need cars at all times. We have to have cars. And the auto industry is why we thrived in the past here in Michigan. I get it. I know it. I understand it. But if we intend to diversify our state's economy or economic portfolio and help become a leader in cleaner and more efficient energy, we can't drive our way to the future. We have to have alternatives. If you heard my Monday morning musing last week, I talked about a Detroit Free Press article written by Michael Griffey from AECOM, which is a Fortune 500 infrastructure consulting firm. Griffey wrote about how millennial and Gen Z Michiganders are moving to other cities. Why? Because these other cities feature a connection that Detroit doesn't have due to a lack of reliable mass transit. Younger people are moving out of Michigan to other cities that have more reliable mass transit. It's that simple. If Governor Whitmer's Population Growth Committee really wants to address this issue of bringing in and keeping younger people here, mass transit is the key. Again, it's not only the progressive thing to do, but it's the common sense thing to do. And speaking of common sense,
I read two letters that I received from fourth graders named Lily and Maddie. They wrote about rising water levels and decreasing biodiversity. They urged us to take climate action. Well, I hope those fourth graders are now enjoying seventh grade, and I hope they are proud of the action that we're taking today for them. Young people want, expect, and deserve us to fight for their future. They demand climate action because they have a greater stake in Michigan's future than we do. They will live with the consequences of the choices that we make today. They are responding to a planet on fire, with fire in their bellies. Because of them, I am a climate optimist. I'm a climate optimist because I know generations of passionate young people like Lily and Maddie will lead us next. I'm a climate optimist because I believe in our boundless ability to innovate. I'm a climate optimist because pessimism is pointless. Let's believe. Let's fight for future generations. Let's get it done. And now, let's finish making it the law of Michigan.
That was Governor Whitmer during the signing ceremony of the Clean Energy and Jobs Act this week, which also received some national recognition from the press. Now, we've covered these bills as they worked their way through the Democratic-controlled state legislature this year. Now, thanks to these bills, Michigan will become 100% clean energy by 2040. Well, sort of. Yes, there's massive investments in true clean energy projects like solar and wind, so that's good. However, here's the breakdown of that 100% clean energy effort. As the bills state, utilities must use up to 60% from renewable energy, but the other 40% will come from nuclear power, hydrogen fuel, and natural gas, coupled with carbon capture. That's all allowed to count towards the remaining 40%. And as you heard during my discussion with Roshan Krishnan from the Michigan Environmental Justice Coalition a few weeks ago, it's really hard to tout a clean energy future by still relying on fossil fuels. Natural gas with carbon capture is highly inefficient and it's costly. This leaves poor communities, which happen to be Black, Brown, or Indigenous communities, it leaves them at greater risk as power plants located near these communities will just keep churning more and more polluted air. I suppose the more frustrating part is how Michigan Republicans and right-wing special interest groups are attacking this new legislation as some kind of big new Green Deal, when it's really not. I mean, as part of this package, Democrats passed a measure allowing farmers to sign up for large wind farm and solar projects with utilities and preventing right-wing local governments from stopping them, which, you know, these governments have been doing across the state. And that's a pretty ambitious step. It really is. And it's one that's got the right wing going absolutely nuts as they claim about big government taking over their lives. Okay, I just interviewed Anna Clark last week from ProPublica on why Democrats must trash the state's emergency manager law, which takes democracy out of the hands of local governments. And I understand that some of my detractors out there are probably saying, how can he be against emergency managers at one point, but then support the state overriding a local government's abilities to block clean energy programs? Well, you see, because I believe in nuances when it comes to public policy. I'm against most kinds of corporate welfare, but I can support certain kinds if they will help working people and if they will help the state's environment in which we live in. I still don't think showering $1 billion here or there to corporations is the best way to spend our money, and that I think we'd do a better job by investing in our people and our state, and I think that would bring businesses in. But my point is, Democrats passed this bold part of their clean energy package by granting power to the state over local governments when it comes to large clean energy projects, giving farmers the chance to join in these projects if they so choose. And, you know, it's being attacked as if it's like the next coming of Stalin by the right wing. And if that's the case, then Democrats should have done more on the environmental justice side. If you're going to be attacked no matter what you do, then just go for it all, I say. That being said, there are still some good parts to this bill, like increasing the state's energy efficiency requirements, or also a requirement of low-income energy efficiency, a requirement that the Michigan Public Service Commission must consider climate, affordability, and equity when making energy decisions. So I think those are good things. Is it perfect? No. But it is a start, and that only means that the fight continues. We need to increase the Democratic majority in the state house next year. We really have to, and we have to increase it by getting more progressives in there. And again, let's not forget about this. Not one Republican voted for these bills. Not one. All right? They want to keep going with big gas and big oil because that's who pays them. Ben DeWicke, a director of community partnerships at Wilker Miller Energy Services, a Michigan-based energy efficiency consulting company, told NBC News just after Governor Whitmer signed these bills into law, he said, "I would have loved to see a 100% renewable standard, but Michigan has historically struggled to pass progressive clean energy legislation. The fact that we have made this mandate, the mandate for 100% clean energy, is an incredible victory." Again, perfect? No. This is, though, a step in the right direction for a change, and I'll take that for now. But we've passed go in the wrong direction when it comes to climate change, holding our utilities accountable, and turning the state's energy portfolio from the 20th century to the 21st century. This is long overdue. The fight does continue. You are listening to LOL.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? Leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
As always, the best way to get a hold of me if you'd like to continue a conversation, email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com, which was put together by my good friend Rich. Thank you again, Rich, for all of your hard work. Now, this is usually the interview portion of the podcast, but we had to push this week's interview with Progressive Democratic State Representative Emily Diefendorf of the 77th District until next week. I will talk with Representative Diefendorf about a host of issues, including some of the Democratic victories since taking over the state legislature, how progressives can build a stronger coalition in the legislature and some priorities that the representative is working on, including affordable housing. So that's coming up on next week's episode. Time now for a Left of Lansing last call. I commented on Twitter about this Washington Post editorial from a few days ago, which was titled, "If Attitudes Don't Shift, a Political Dating Mismatch Will Threaten Marriage." Now, at first blush, I looked to see if a comic or a comedy writer was responsible for this editorial because it seemed like an abject joke. Now, listen, the editorial starts out by complaining about how polarized we are in this country as the Washington Post editorial board does its best Scarlett O'Hara, I do declare, by fanning themselves to prevent from collective fainting. You see, Generation Z women are trending more and more progressive with their politics, which really isn't hard to understand, really, as their abortion rights are nullified by religious zealots, their contraception rights are also erased by religious zealots, and they have to endure daily examples of misogyny on social media or in the workplace or just whenever they're out and about. However, their Generation Z counterparts aren't trending more progressive. Sadly, Generation Z men are turning more to the right. Now, the Post editorial board uses a poll conducted by the right-wing American Enterprise Institute to help illustrate their point, and I'll take this poll at face value because it might contain some truth in it. The survey reports that 46% of white Gen Z women are liberal compared to only 28% of white Gen Z men, more of whom, 36%, now identify as conservative. Norms around sexuality and gender are diverging too, whereas 61% of Gen Z women see themselves as feminist, only 43% of Gen Z men do. Now, the editorial points out how this isn't too surprising, considering how popular so-called malefluencers are amongst boys and young men, which I agree. I think white bros, such as Matt Walsh, for example, are having an impact with younger male audiences, and for the worst. And as an aside, I love that the so-called malefluencers, such as Matt Walsh or Tucker Carlson or countless others, are anything but the illustration of the mythic, rugged American male. Please, look at pictures of Matt Walsh and tell me what you see. Please, I'd love to hear you tell me that he's a man's man. Anyway, here's the crux of the Washington Post editorial. In another era, political or ideological differences might have had less impact on marriage rates, but increasingly, the political is personal. A 2021 survey of college students found that 71% of Democrats would not date someone with opposing views. Now, there is some logic to this. Marriage across religious or political lines, if either partner considers those things to be central to their identity, can be associated with lower levels of self-satisfaction, and politics is becoming more central to people's identity. This mismatch means that someone will need to compromise. The Washington Post continues, as the researchers Lyman Stone and Brad Wilcox have noted, about 1 in 5 young singles will have little choice but to marry someone outside their ideological tribe. The other option is that they decline to get married at all. Not an ideal outcome considering the data showing that marriage is good for the health of societies and individuals alike. This, of course, is on average. Marriage isn't for everyone, nor is staying in a physically or emotionally abusive marriage ever the right choice. But on the whole, while politically mixed couples report somewhat lower levels of satisfaction than same-party couples, they are still likely to be happier than those who remain single. Okay, so it appears that the Post editorial board is really, really begging progressive women to just get married. Please just get married to their right-wing, anti-feminist, pro-white, pro-Trump, anti-democratic, and anti-woman male counterparts. You know, come on, ladies, do it for the good of the outfit. Now, maybe others have a different reading than I do about this editorial, but that's what I took from it. I mean, the board only highlighted how Democrats would not date someone with opposing views. It's like they're telling Gen Z women, okay, we know these white Christian nationalist fascists are a bit fringy and gross, but come on, ladies, live a little. Women, and not just Gen Z women, should not have to apologize for taking strong political stances and for allowing their strong progressive stances to be part of who they are. They shouldn't have to apologize for not wanting to be with someone that isn't like them. But as for Gen Z women, they don't see masculinity from the right. They see these guys for who they've become, a bag of dicks. And editorials like this one paint a perfect example why the corporate media are pushing and cheering for Trump to get back into the White House. You see, they're fine with a little fascism taking over the country just as long as they get some good tax cuts. So please, you little women out there, can't you just do your patriotic duty and get married to some of these anti-women Gen Z Trumpers? And then maybe, just maybe, some of you would end up voting Republican. Trust me, that's what this piece is all about when you read between the lines. You know, rather than begging women to marry misogynistic right-wing men to save marriage for marriage's sake, perhaps a better editorial could have focused on what's the matter with white Gen Z men? Silly Pat.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. I just have to mention this blurb, though, from the Detroit News. This comes from reporter Craig Mauger on the nuttiness that is the Michigan Republican Party. He wrote about a Michigan Republican Party meeting earlier this week in which right-winger Linda Lee Tarver, who lost in her bid to gain a seat on the State Board of Education, Tarver gave this video presentation on how Republicans really won the 2022 election. Now, she's not talking about the 2020 race with Donald Trump. This is the race which, as Mauger notes, Republican Tudor Dixon lost against Governor Whitmer by double digits, and Christina Caramo, who now leads this sorry party, lost by an even greater margin against Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. But according to Tarver, they really, 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 really won. Here's what she said. Every Republican was winning after 80 counties were counted. Every Republican from Tudor Dixon all the way down was winning. We won 65 or 67 counties outright, and we were winning. Three counties stopped counting on election day in 2022. And then, the next day in the afternoon, every Republican lost. So, I don't want you to question, as Republicans, do not question the 2022 election of whether you had good candidates. You had great candidates. We did our job. But at the end of the day, we still have cheating going on and fraud going on. We won election day. And the next day, after 80 out of 83 counties were counted, your Republican slate won, and all of the proposals were dying on a vine. The next day, in the afternoon, after they were cooking those books and ballots, we lost. Every Republican lost. I needed you to know that the truth about what had happened. All right, everybody. Well, there you go. You see, this is why we cannot allow this fascist nutjob of a party to run the state ever again. And the business community, a lot of the business community, is backing them. So while presidential elections are indeed important, and the presidential election next year is indeed important, and the fight for Congress is indeed important, the fight for the state house next year is just as important. We've seen what Democrats were able to accomplish with just a two-seat majority as they tried to reverse 40 years of Republican malpractice. Just think, if we get more progressives in there for 2025, we can go even further to help the working families of Michigan. We can strengthen their livelihoods and thereby strengthen the future of this state. Coming up next week, Progressive Democratic State Representative Emily Devendorf will join me. And the week after, Livingston County progressive activist and host of the Stir podcast and also friend of this podcast, Casey Helton, will join me as she will help wrap up Left of Lansing for 2023. Until then, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. edited by Pat Johnston and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.